is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
From Jersey to Vegas, we are coast to coast and locked and loaded on this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Lots of news and injury updates around the NFL as we get you set for the final week of the NFL's preseason. The countdown to kickoff for regular season action continues. We are down to 15 days until we've got Thursday night football, Ravens and Chiefs. The countdown to college football down to 3. Week zero is upon us, ladies and gentlemen. Michael, the future is now, safe to say. We are here.
Yeah, get ready to roll, because in a couple of weeks we'll be complaining about how hard and how busy it is, right? I mean, the rest is over. It's like here in Ocean City, everybody complains about no business in the winter, and then when it gets busy in the summer, they complain. So look, this is exactly what we wanted. We're where we want to be. I'm excited. Fall's the best time of the year for me, and I'm looking forward to college week zero over in Dublin. We'll see how that goes. Florida State, Georgia Tech. And I'm really looking forward to 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yep. Blessed to be stressed is the way I'll put it here. And speaking of week zero, our own Adam Burke is going to join us coming up in about 30 minutes. Managing editor of VSiN.com. He is one of our college football experts, has done a ton of work on the college football betting guide. And he did a deep dive into the ACC preview for this season. So he'll have lots of thoughts when it comes to that Florida State, Georgia Tech game kicking things off in Dublin, as you referenced. Also on the show today, Michael's got a fresh column live on VSiN.com. We'll do a deep dive on the Broncos at the end of the hour and in hour two. Quarterback competitions, fantasy notes to be aware of. What would a Wednesday be without closing the show with a little why not Wednesday as well? I'm going to throw some long shot props Michael's way. See if we can get him to say why not. Now, someone considerably less optimistic, Tua Tagovailoa, Michael, who was on the Dan Le Batard show earlier this week, was very candid when discussing his feelings about how he was coached by Brian Flores compared to now and the coaching situation he has with Mike McDaniel. Straight up came out and said Flores, who's now a coordinator with the Vikings, is a terrible person. Said Flores told him he sucked, he didn't belong, he didn't deserve to be there, compared to Mike McDaniels, who's been this breath of fresh air, telling him how lucky the Dolphins are essentially to have him. Well, Brian Flores hit the podium yesterday and had his response. Take a listen.
You know, specific to, you know, the comments that were made by Tua, I just want to say, look, I'm happy, genuinely happy, genuinely happy for the success that Tua's had. And I really wish him nothing but the best. That hit me in a way that, you know, wasn't positive for me. But at the same time, I've got to use that and say, hey, how can I grow from that? You know, how can I be better? And that's really where I'm at from that standpoint. Do I feel like, you know, that's me? No. But, you know, how can I grow from that situation and create a world where that's not, you know, the case that anyone says that about Brian Flores?
Michael, I think Flores handled that about as well as you could. But yeah, what have you made of this whole situation?
Well, I mean, look, Tua felt like he was mistreated, wasn't respected, which I think is the critical component in this whole thing. It's one thing to be hard and demanding on players. It's another thing to feel that you have their best interest, that you respect them. Mm-hmm. And he feels like Brian crossed the line. I wasn't there, so I don't know. I know Brian to be a good person, not the person that Tua described. And, you know, this is really one of those things where when you examine it, Brian Flores was 19 and 14 in his two seasons there. Mike McDaniel's been 20 and 16 in his two seasons there with a lot better supporting cast around. Remember, they were tanking for Tua when Brian first got there, you know? And yeah, so I think a little bit of that tank for Tua and the lacks when they actually saw Tua come in. Look, there's no excuse for disrespecting players. You have to be professional. I think Brian apologized for that. I do think that, you know, we are in a part where you have to get players to understand the difference between coaching and criticism, because, you know, you're going to have to drive people. You're going to have to work them. And all we've heard out of Miami so far is Vic Fangio's is not a nice man. He works you too hard, and that Brian Flores was too tough on that. OK, I accept that. Players have their opinion. But when you are basically 3-9 after week 14 of the season, and you're 4-10 in the last 2 years in the second half of the season, something's going wrong in Miami. And that's what Mike McDaniel's record is. Maybe, you know, Mike is great, but maybe they need to get pushed a little harder. I want to be very clear here. Brian, you can't disrespect players. And Tua is claiming he disrespected them. Brian apologized. We move forward. I don't see Brian as that person. I see Brian as a good coach. I really do. But I think to me, what you have to understand is we have to be able to push players, and how you set the stage for that is really important.
Yeah, and I think that you put that well, right? Like, when it comes to coaching, there's a difference between being coached tough and being hard and having constructive criticism versus what sounds like being cruel to an extent. And a lot of the people have come out and said, oh, well, like Tua is just soft. He's being soft. I mean, he was coached by Nick Saban in college too. So I'm not sure how much I buy that he's soft, because he's certainly had tough coaching in his career to this point. But regardless, at this point, it's interesting to me that we're having this conversation still, because we are a couple years removed from that situation now. And Tua has been to the playoffs each of the last 2 years, but as you referenced, they haven't had success beyond that yet. He stayed healthy this entire last season. Will he be able to do that again this year? Which kind of presents an interesting conversation here with the AFC East, Michael. And Miami is plus 200 in that division right now. The Bills, who have been on top for a while, winning 4 straight division titles, but they trade Stephon Diggs. Curtis Samuel's now week to week with the toe issue. You lose marquee players on defense because of cap issues. You see Matt Milano now injured there. They're no longer a solo favorite in the division. Jets and Bills both plus 180. Miami, as I mentioned, plus 200 there. So the Jets clawing up that order as well. Like, who do you think has the edge in the AFC East right now?
I still think it's Buffalo, but I'm worried about Buffalo's defense. I'm worried about their defensive line, you know, although the way they played against Pittsburgh was very impressive. But I think it's Buffalo because they have the best quarterback. I think Buffalo can run the ball. I think Buffalo being a 12 personnel team is different than Buffalo being strictly an 11 team, relying on a slot receiver. With Dalton Kincaid inside, with Dawson Knox to block as a tight end, and then their receivers, along with the great Josh Allen, who rushed for 15 touchdowns last year. And we seen James Cook really last year take that huge step forward. So I'm not buying Miami, Stormy, until they can prove to me they can play with toughness, until they can prove to me they can beat a good team. They have yet to beat a good team, right? Especially in the second half of the season. They end their year in Cleveland and New York. Do you have any faith? Do you have any faith that Tua is going to be able to play well in cold weather? I just don't. That doesn't mean I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the young man. I've just watched him play, because I think he struggles when it's not perfect conditions. I think you go back to the game in Nashville in December when it started to rain and they were on a run, and all of a sudden it fell apart.
Yeah. Michael, you better watch yourself, though. You don't want Tua to get mad and go on the Dan Le Batard show and say all these things about you. No, yeah. I'm kidding.
I think those conversations are best to have one-on-one. I don't think it's good for a coach to call out a player. And I don't think it's good for a player to call out a coach. I think man-to-man, you have that conversation. And I don't know what the intent was by Tua to do it. I think he should have called Brian on the phone and said, hey, look, I don't think you're a good person. I don't really want to have anything to do with you. And move on. But when you announce it to the world, now Brian has to carry that with him. And I think Brian took on the responsibility. He ran to the roar. And now he's apologized. And, of course, you're going to hear these idiots on, you know, talk shows all over. Well, that's just a Belichick guy. Look, I've been around Bill Belichick most of my career. He's never disrespected a player. He's coached him hard, but he's never disrespected a player. Like, not everything is connected. Not everything is connected back to something else.
And like I said, Michael, I think that Brian Flores handled this on the podium about as well as you could, took ownership, didn't deny and say, I'm not like this, I'm not like that, but said that he is trying to make, you know, positive ways to how he handles players. And you saw, too, it wasn't in the clip that we shared, but you see players that went up on the podium with him and were standing with him in solidarity. So clearly in Minnesota, at least the players that are around him right now seem to feel like he's a good coach and he's well respected from that standpoint. We will keep it in the division, though, because we got some interesting sound bites from the Jets. Aaron Rodgers told reporters yesterday that this Jets camp has been one of the most taxing he's been involved in a number of years. Quote, I would say this camp is much harder this year and maybe the hardest in the last 7 or 8 of my career. Michael, is this, do you think this is just like age and coming off of an Achilles tear, or maybe the defense being really good at practice, because rumor is that they've been pretty tight on that offense so far in practice?
Well, I think that they realize that if they're going to be any good, you got to practice, right? And I think they've altered their practice schedule. I think we've seen it down the road, down 95 in Philadelphia. Philly has changed what they do. I mean, they recreated their entire sports performance department this offseason. It's been a kind of an unknown. Nobody said a lot about it, but they have. And I think that the Jets have taken a similar approach, that we have to practice, we have to prepare. Now, they're not playing Rodgers in a game. I get that. But I do think that they're really cognizant of the fact that they've got to get this team ready, because opening day out in San Francisco, they'll be a physical team ready to go. And they need to match that physicality. There's not a lot of margin for error when you're the Jets. They've got to be ready to go.
Yeah, and by Jets head coach Robert Saleh's count, they have taken 300 more practice reps than they had at this point last year. So definitely finding the value in practicing. You mentioned that about Rodgers. He said that he'll leave it up to Saleh to decide if he's going to play in this preseason finale on Saturday. There's questions not only about whether or not he'll play, which I don't anticipate he will, but will Deshaun Watson play as well in Cleveland? We'll have, when we come back from this quick break, some sound from Kevin Stefanski breaking down the expectations for week 3 of the NFL preseason. When we come back, lots of injuries to update you on as well. You won't want to miss it. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Aaron Rodgers has yet to take a preseason snap in 2024, says he's leaving it up to head coach Robert Saleh to decide whether or not he'll play in this weekend's preseason finale against the Giants. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Rodgers hasn't taken, Michael, a meaningful snap in about a year now, and he only had 4 snaps when he did it. If you're Robert Saleh, are you wanting to get him out on the field this year, give him an opportunity to ease in a little bit before you have the San Francisco 49ers? How do you feel?
I would feel a little nervous about that turf in the Meadowlands. I would be worried about the turf monster there. I don't know if it's Jimmy Hoffa underneath there or what, but I would be a little worried. And so I would probably wait. And look, there's never a single entity when it comes to who's playing in the game, right? The hardest part is, if you want to play the quarterback, you got to play the offensive line, because you can't put the line out there without guys that know how to play. Because it's just not fair, especially not to Aaron Rodgers. So to me, that's the decision that comes down for Saleh. What do I do? How do I play this? How do I play my guys? Do I get them out there? I think the turf is probably the biggest deterrent he has. I think he's just going to wait and take it out to the grass in Levi Stadium.
It's a very fair point. In week 3, by the way, the Jets are getting 1 point right now against the Giants, total 31.5. But with this Jets team as a whole, like, I feel like there's so much optimism and excitement and expectation for how far the Jets can go in the long term. And they're going to be poised for a run in the AFC and a Super Bowl. I'm like, this season's a win if you get a full game out of Aaron Rodgers at this point after what we went through last year. Do we have any update, by the way, on Hassan Reddick while we're here?
No, I have not heard a sound. I haven't heard anything. You know, I have heard no movement on that. And on the San Francisco thing, we've heard, you know, I'm not going to mention it. We're not allowed to talk about it on the show. But, you know, there's been meetings, supposedly, according to Jordan Schultz. Now, this meeting hasn't produced a contract, which it seems like this is what all the meetings have done. So I don't know where Reddick is. I think he's looking at $4 million right about now. I don't know where he gets that back. You know, and I think to me, he's going to have to come in at some point. Either football players play football or they retire.
Just hemorrhaging money at this point. He doesn't plan to show up without a contract, but the team doesn't want to work on a contract until or unless he shows up. So it's just a game of chicken at this point, it feels like. So we'll see how things play out. And Michael, in the rundown. I did put something about wide receiver contracts, so we'll talk about it a little bit later.
I saw it. I looked. I saw you.
Another quarterback, though, who is TBD in the preseason for week three, Deshaun Watson. He was cleared for contact last week coming back from the shoulder injury that, of course, ended his season early. Head coach Kevin Stefanski last week said he expected to play Watson this week, but when he was on the podium yesterday, not quite sure yet. Take a listen.
Yeah, so all of our starters should expect to play, and then we'll determine who does or doesn't, how many plays they do. Like I told you guys, in particular with Deshaun, I want to take in all the information this week and really make a final determination later in the week.
His injury wasn't a super usual one for quarterbacks. Do you feel the need for him to take a hit before you get to week one?
I don't. Yeah, I don't. He's played a lot of football. He's been tackled a lot. So, but he's confident.
I know it's not a step into your office day, Michael, but how do you think Stefanski should be handling this situation? Would you like to see Deshaun Watson Saturday?
Well, he's got a couple conflicting things going on. Both his starting tackles, Conklin and Willis, are still on PUP. He's going to have to make a decision on both those guys by Tuesday of next week because they either go PUP reserve or they're active. So that's a problem. They're not healthy. They're certainly not playing in this third preseason game. And then the backups last week got hurt. A lot of them. DeJuan Jones was out. Hudson was out. So I think to me that's why he's hesitant in putting Deshaun. I think his plan always was to play Deshaun. But I think with the offensive line, look, they've got three starters on their team, Chubb, Willis, and Conklin, that are still on PUP. And it's interesting. The line has flipped. I mean, I know Dallas has issues, but we fully expect CeeDee Lamb to be there when the bell rings in Cleveland Stadium at 4:00. That being said, you know, what can we expect from Deshaun Watson in that game? I don't know. The Browns have as many questions. Maybe they don't have as many holdouts, but they have as many questions as the Dallas Cowboys do when we get to hear Tom Brady for the first time.
Yep, that will be the debut broadcast for Tom, who he doesn't need the preseason. He's just going in ready to go. But I will say, like, he did some UFL games in the spring. I'm sure he's doing preseason games behind the scenes, but it's everyone's very excited for that for sure. But in terms of the line, as you mentioned, yes, the Browns are a 2.5-point favorite right now. We had sportsbook director Thomas Gable on the show earlier this week. He said this has been one of the more bet games on that entire week one slate, despite all of the questions that you mentioned. And it's really interesting the way that people view this Cleveland Browns team, feeling like this is a very Super Bowl capable roster if they had a Super Bowl capable quarterback. And Deshaun Watson has shown with the Texans that he could be that, but he's pretty far removed from that at this point, Michael. And we haven't seen anything near that guy since he's been in Cleveland.
Yeah, and I think this story, I think there's two conflicting elements of this Cleveland Brown team that we're not sure of if can be corrected. The first being, can they play defense on the road? I think that's a fundamental question that we learned last year. They couldn't. And secondly, can Deshaun Watson play as good as Joe Flacco? Flacco throws for 1,616 yards in 5 games. Watson throws for 1,114 yards in 5 games. So, you know, in 6 games, excuse me. So with one more game, he threw for 500 yards less. So, like, what one are we going to get? The last good time we saw Deshaun Watson perform on the field was with Will Fuller. I mean, they may have to bring Will Fuller back because it seems like he only plays good if Will Fuller's in the game. This is a questionable team, especially when you know that they have no tackles. They lost their offensive line coach who held things together pretty well for Kevin Stefanski. They have a completely new offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, right? They wanted to make these changes. How's this all going to come together? You know, and all we talk about is Dallas having problems. But Dallas, you know, kept their staff offensively intact. Defensively, Mike Zimmer's challenged. And they need CeeDee Lamb. I mean, all the conversation around Lamb, Parsons, and Prescott, the only one that they don't have is Lamb. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Prescott in 2025. We're talking about Parsons in 2026. They're going to be there for the opening day. They'll be in Cleveland. But we, you know, the story tends to generate another story that's not relevant.
Yeah, that game nonetheless, though, will be exciting. And you've said it repeatedly. You do still expect CeeDee Lamb to be there on week one. Micah Parsons, his own teammate, said as much to media as well. But to go back to Deshaun Watson real quickly, because we will later on in hour two get into some fantasy football talk here from a fantasy standpoint. Watson averaged 341 points per season in PPR leagues, second in the league to only Mahomes from 2018 to 20. Since signing the big contract and hitting the field in Cleveland after missing all of 2021, has averaged just 86 points. So from 381 to 86, 42nd among NFL QBs. The drop-off has been massive despite signing the massive guaranteed contract. Another quarterback update for you. ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting yesterday, the Bears will sit number one overall pick Caleb Williams in their final preseason game this weekend against the Chiefs. Andy Reid electing to do the same for his team, so no reprise. Sorry, fans, of the behind-the-back pass from Mahomes. The Bears lay in one in Kansas City, total 32 in that one, the second of two games that are coming up tomorrow. But with a rookie quarterback like this, I think it's an interesting conversation to be had. They feel like they have seen enough of Caleb Williams in the preseason.
They gave him a lot of reps, and certainly they had some games. They had inter-squad scrimmages, too, so you know, this third preseason game is always the one that teams just kind of let their what you have is you have a group of guys competing for the last 8-10 spots and practice squad jobs. And I think you're better off letting them play. Now, if you're Chicago, the danger here is if you put Tyson Badgett out there, you know, and you lose him, you better have an emergency quarterback ready to go. You better have somebody who knows the system, who knows what they're doing, because you know, right now you have Brett Rippon and you have Austin Reed. That's all you have. So maybe they feel good about Brett Rippon. I mean, this will be a game to evaluate him. He played well in the Hall of Fame game, but can he play well in this game too? It's fascinating. I mean, remember Brett Rippon played up in Green Bay for the Rams, and that was not very good. So this backup quarterback situation for the Bears is not good. It's subpar, to say the least, to be polite. They got to count that Caleb Williams stays healthy. And just remember, last year, only Bryce Young was the only rookie quarterback to play in every single game. And he was the smallest of the bunch. He played in every game.
Which I still find to be hilarious, Michael, because the big criticism about Bryce Young is his size and stature, and is he going to be able to hold up? He gets sacked more than anybody else, and he's the one that stays healthy. Meanwhile, Anthony Richardson, who's the combine god and is all about the physique, the size, and everything, only started and finished two games last year, saw action in four. It's crazy to think about. But I think another good natural follow-up to your thought process on the Bears quarterback room is think about how many backups in general we saw last year. The Browns, who we were just talking about, had five different quarterbacks.
66, I think the number ended up, Stormy. Wasn't it 66 guys?
I believe it was quarterback last year. I believe it was 66 last year and a record 68 the year before. So we are seeing this at a rate that we haven't ever. So you need to have that quarterback room buttoned up. We got to hit the break here real quickly. When we come back, turning the page to college football, VSiN's own Adam Burke is going to join us, get you set for what you need to know with week zero. We're 3 days away, baby.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Have no fear. Week zero is here. College football. We got four games coming up this weekend featuring FBS programs. Great appetizer for the monster slate of week one. Get back in the flow of your prep a little bit. And as our own Adam Burke wrote this week on his VSiN.com week zero odds report, while these lines have been up for a number of months, they've seen some movement. This is the time, now that we've reached game week, that limits go up, bettors are dialing in more to football. You'll have casual bettors join in, and we'll see some menus expand. Speaking of Adam Burke, he's with us on the Progressive guest line as we speak. VSiN.com managing editor Adam Burke right here. Is it weird to have somebody quote you to you, Adam? How we doing?
No, not really. I don't think so, but I'm doing good. Good to be here. Good to be talking about actual college football games now instead of just speculating on, you know, what these teams are going to look like going into the season. Now we can actually find out, even though I don't know if we want to read too much into this Florida State Georgia Tech game, because it's definitely strange to play your first game of the season, not only in week zero, but also to play it over in Dublin, Ireland.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the hardest thing, and you have to do this, Adam, for the guide and everywhere, is without preseason, and all these transfers, are we sure these ratings that say these players are good are really actually good?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a fair point, especially when you talk about a team like Florida State that has a significant amount of turnover here this season. Of course, Jordan Travis no longer the quarterback. DJ Uiagalelei now back in the ACC. You know, Keon Coleman is gone. Trey Benson is gone. You know, they have some losses on the defensive side too. But this is pretty much a retooled offense for the Seminoles here. Not only that, their offensive coordinator, Alex Atkins, is suspended for the first three games of the season. So that adds another wrinkle here to this game. Maybe some of the reasons why people are backing Georgia Tech here, just not really expecting all that efficient of an offensive performance from Florida State. And look, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of efficiency here from the Seminoles to cover, you know, double digit spread, especially because Haynes King played so well for Georgia Tech last year. A lot of returning production for them, a lot of continuity. I could see why people like Georgia Tech. My raw number is 13.5 here. If it gets to 9, 9.5, maybe I'll take Florida State. Just kind of trusting all the work I did over the preseason. But for now, I understand why the sentiment is a little bit low on the Seminoles.
Yeah, and for Georgia Tech, Brent Key got this team to a bowl game last year. They were great as an underdog, 7-2 ATS in the underdog role there. But I have found it fascinating, considering how many people believe in Florida State in the ACC this year, that in terms of this week zero game in Dublin, most people are fading them. This thing opened 14, and we've steadily seen it creep down to now, as you referenced, that 10.5. Another big storyline that I don't think a lot of us expected to be talking about this week is actually more travel than Florida State to Dublin. It's Delaware State trying to get to Hawaii. They had a bus snafu, apparently, yesterday on their way to JFK, that they missed their flight to Hawaii. And we've seen some betting impact there. Hawaii was a 38-point favorite, and now it's over 40.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, I think the starting point here is that Delaware State was awful last year. I mean, they went 1-10 in year one under head coach Lee Hall. They were 0-5 in MEAC play. This wasn't a good football team anyway. And now you have, you know, some of these compromising factors of not only the long travel, but also now the travel issues that they had. And I believe I saw this morning that they're actually splitting up the team so that they can fly commercial, because that's really the only way that they can get there at this point in time. And look, it's a great opportunity for these kids, right? I mean, I'm sure most of them have never been to Hawaii, may have never gone, you know, in their lifetimes to Honolulu. So I'm sure they were looking forward to that and excited, but, you know, it's still something of a business trip for the Hornets. But again, for Hawaii, I mean, they've got a very experienced quarterback in Braden Shager. That he should be a guy who's able to put up numbers here. The only thing that worries me, and this is something that's a factor really in the first 2-3 weeks of the season, this might be the only time of the year that the freshmen and the walk-ons get a chance to play. So you may be asking Hawaii to cover a number in the second half without most of their starters in the game. Now, to Michael's point, there is no preseason in college football, so these reps are very important. You want to make sure your timing is down in real game conditions, but also coaches want to get a look at the future and want to give guys who worked really hard throughout the spring and summer an opportunity to play. So I think it's really hard in some cases to lay these big numbers. Maybe this is one where when a first half market opens, you just take Hawaii to blow the doors off of them early and quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Montana State, a 1AA school in the old school terminology, playing University of New Mexico from Albuquerque. That line has kind of moved from 10.5. Now it's up to 11.5. What's your thoughts on this? Would you grab the points in New Mexico, the home team?
Well, I mean, this is going to wind up being, if the line keeps trending in the direction it's going, this is going to wind up being one of the highest FCS versus FBS road favorite games of all time. Montana State is a top five FCS team. They're number 4 in terms of the FCS ranking here coming into the season. So they are a very formidable program. Both Montana and Montana State have a lot of success up there with football. New Mexico is going through some transition here. I'm very surprised that Bronco Mendenhall wanted to take this job. I guess he just wanted to be back as a head coach that badly. Last year, New Mexico really stepped up offensively with Bryant Vincent as the offensive coordinator, but now he's at Louisiana Monroe. Mendenhall, I think, wants to run the football, wants to be physical, wants to be aggressive. I don't know that New Mexico really has the horses to do that type of thing. And I don't think they have the running game to really keep Montana State off the field. So I understand why this one is going up. If anything, I would take New Mexico just because this is a historical outlier, but this number may continue to go up. Yeah. So there may be an opportunity to get a little bit better of a price here on this one for the guys from Albuquerque.
Yeah, I was going to say the Bobcats just keep taking money that we're at 11 now. New Mexico predicted to finish second to last in the Mountain West. The only team predicted to finish worse is the University of Nevada, who also coincidentally has a week zero game taken on new ACC power SMU. SMU laying 27 in the 8 Eastern kickoff game. 85% of the handle and 66% of bets laying that big number with SMU. Do you think that could be the side?
Well, look, I mean, this number is actually, Nevada took some money yesterday. This number came down to 24.5, 25. And I'm a little bit upset with myself because the closest I got to a week zero bet here was going to be Nevada plus 27. I was hoping maybe I could squeeze a little bit more out of the number. My number is 26, so I'm pretty close to the market. But I think this is a big ask of SMU, where I don't think Nevada is going to be a very good football team. I agree with where they're placed, you know, in the coaches poll and all of that for the Mountain West standings. But at least they have a new head coach here in Jeff Choate, who's at least going to bring a different voice, maybe a little bit more excitement and enthusiasm into the program. And for SMU, it's a big number on the road, in elevation, in week zero, where you're not fully up to game speed yet. And another instance where, hey, they lost Preston Stone late last year to an injury, and it really kind of, you know, derailed things at the end of the year for them. Well, you want to make sure that he stays healthy throughout the course of this season. So I wish I had jumped on Nevada plus 27. It would have been an ugly bet to make and not a fun way to start the college football season. But I think that may have been the side. And look, 24.5, it's really not that different of a number. But, you know, obviously when 27 was out there and now it's not, you kind of wish you were able to get that.
Let's jump ahead to week one. I mean, I know that sounds stupid, but let's go. This North Carolina-Minnesota matchup to me is fascinating. Minnesota, the home team, 2.5-point favorite. You can get some. Westgate has a 2. You can get some 2s out there. What's your handicap on this one?
Yeah, I'm looking here right now. I have Minnesota 2.5-point home dog in this game. So North Carolina is the side I would be looking at in this one because they are getting points on the road here in Minneapolis. And also, I wrote this up in our college football betting guide. I like the alternate win total over for North Carolina. I think this could be a team that really surprises. I think they're a dark horse contender in the ACC, which I think is down this season, especially at the top, where I don't think Clemson is all that sustainable. Florida State, I have worries about them. I don't think Louisville is going to be very good. I think Miami ultimately wins the conference, but I like North Carolina in this game against Minnesota. I'm not worried about the quarterback play. Yes, they lose Drake May, but Max Johnson is a very, very experienced player. Omarion Hampton ran for over 1,500 yards last year. Jeff Collins is an excellent defensive coordinator. This is one of my favorite plays of week one. I think North Carolina is the side here. I'm not a big PJ Fleck guy. I'm not rowing the boat with the Gophers here. I think North Carolina starts out what should be a pretty successful season with a nice road win here in Minneapolis.
He snuck in that note about Miami too. They're 4-1 odds right now in the ACC championship. Adam has a full write-up on the ACC, a huge contributor to the college football betting guide, which if you are a subscriber, VSiN.com/subscribe, you get that guide, the NFL guide, everything VSiN has to offer, including all of our picks and predictions. Before we let you go, Adam, in terms of just college football content this year on VSiN.com, what can people expect?
Well, they can expect a lot. We're going to have a lot of content for both college football and the NFL. I'm going through putting together the content calendar right now for football season, and it is jam-packed. It is very robust. We're going to have early week best bets from Tyler Shoemaker, later week thoughts on games that have moved, some middles that have been created. We'll have best bets from all kinds of different personalities across the VSiN network. I'll have my updated power ratings every Sunday night/Monday morning. And the nice thing is with both college football and the NFL, we put together hub pages that are link shares of our betting tools and all of our content written for the week. So it's easy to find over at VSiN.com. So today is the day to become a VSiN Pro subscriber.
Adam, you're the man. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks. Have a good one, guys.
Adam Burke, everybody, make sure you follow him on X at Skating Tripods. And of course, all of the written work and production value at VSiN.com. We're going to hit the break. Speaking of VSiN.com, Michael's got a new column. We're talking Broncos coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thanks for hanging out with us here on this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you live from coast to coast. Michael's out there at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino. And Michael, the great Jimmy Buffett, rest in peace, has a number of incredible lines, including "Good God Almighty, which way do I steer?" He also said something very suspect about a conga line at one point. But as you wrote in your latest column at VSiN.com, in the song "He Went to Paris," questions that bothered him so. And you, my friend, have a question that has been bothering you for a while now in the NFL. What's going on?
Well, I don't understand, and you can help me, and I need help. I always need a lot of help. I don't understand why the Raiders' win total is at 6.5 and the Broncos is at 5.5. Now, I do understand that the Broncos are 1-9 against the Raiders in the last 10 outings. I get that. And I do understand that the Broncos have Jarrett Stidham, a rookie, and Zach Wilson, a quarterback. But this Raider team isn't exactly dangling with talent at quarterback. And so for me, the way Bo Nix has looked this summer, I thought that number might edge up a little bit. Not that I think they're going to be a Super Bowl winning team, but if you take out the horrendous performance against Miami, which was 350 yards passing, 350 rushing, they allowed 70 points, you see the defense kind of rallied around, and they had moments where they just couldn't play well down the stretch. They lose a game with the ball, down 24-21 to the Jets. They lose that. They lose to the Patriots with the ball, had a chance to come back in that game, can't get that done. Have a huge lead on the Washington football team at halftime and lose that game. So there's three games, and they won 9. The Raiders really didn't have any of those games, right? I mean, the Raiders lost 3-0 to Minnesota, and if they would have just put Garoppolo in, they might have won that game, but that's a whole other story. So I know the Raiders are really good in their defensive front. Wilkins, you know, that Max Crosby, whether Tyree Wilson comes along, Kuntz has come really well, played well for them. But I just think, to me, I'm going to go with Sean Payton here. I believe in him as a coach. I believe he'll manage the game. And without Russell Wilson, he's going to get somebody who's going to play the game as if he were playing quarterback. And I think they'll have more wins than 5.5.
And it's interesting, Michael, because when you initially asked me this question, I thought, oh, it must be because I know the Broncos have a very difficult schedule. It's in the top 10 most difficult in the entire National Football League this year. But then I go back and I look through the Raiders' schedule, and theirs is just one position easier than the Denver Broncos. So it's very much so in the same wheelhouse in terms of strength of schedule between these two teams. They play in the same division, but the Broncos are not being given that same benefit of the doubt from an overall talent perspective. I agree with you. I think that 5.5 does feel low if what we're seeing from Bo Nix right now is real. Because you look at some of the talent around him, and I like this wide receiver core with Tim Patrick, Marvin Mims, Troy Franklin, Cortland Sutton at running back. Javonte Williams, I think now that he's farther removed from that injury, should be much steadier at the running back position. Samaje Perine, they're going to move the football. The big question for them is the defense, where for the Raiders, it feels like that's going to be their strength.
Well, but the Raiders' secondary is still in question. Now, Jack Jones came in and made some big plays for him, turned the ball over. But the Raiders' offense down the stretch, the last 4 weeks of the season, they didn't have a turnover. That's why they were 3-1. And, you know, when they played against the Colts, they couldn't create a turnover, and that's why they lost. So the Raiders' margin for error is no different than the Denver margin for error. But I'm going to go with Sean Payton's ability to manage the game. I think yesterday on the show, you know, we had
Adam Hill.
We had some. Yeah. And Zach said it really well, right? That, you know, watching Antonio Pierce manage the game is an event in itself. Sean Payton knows how to manage a game. He knows how to manage a game. To get 9 wins out of that team last year after giving up 70 points, I think that's rather remarkable. And I think we don't pay enough attention to the coaching. We tend to criticize the play calling, but the overall coaching, I think, is really difficult and overlooked. And I just don't see it at the Raiders. I see him making, you know, I know last year he's in the booth and they think they're going to go for it on fourth down because he's telling them to go for it. Then he punts.
Yeah. The decision making is questionable. And I would like to follow up on that, because didn't didn't the Raiders hire somebody specifically to be able to help with those things? Is he just going rogue in the preseason, or what's happening here?
Well, I think, you know, you can hire all the people you want. You got to get the guy who's on the field, who's under the pressure, the spotlight, the moment to say, this is what we're going to do. Look, that job is not easy. I'm not suggesting it is for Antonio Pierce, but without any experience, it's really hard.
Sure.
And what my point of the article was simply this: all that rah-rah stuff is going to, it has already gone away. I mean, Davante Adams has been a problem, right? We see it in New England, all the rah-rah stuff, everything's better without Belichick. Oh, there's Matt Judon out the door already. You know, so I think to me, every season's a new season. Mm-hmm. It's challenging. And I think this is going to be hard. When you have Gardner Minshew as your quarterback with no offensive guards, right? The Raiders, if you said to somebody in the league, who's got the most centers on a roster, the easy answer if you're doing any pro personnel work at all is the Raiders. Because they, you know, they have all these centers. They have guys that play center better than they play guard, and yet they're trying to make them out to be guards. You know, when they brought Andre James back and paid him the money, I think most people that still working in the building were like, wait a minute, I thought we were moving Dylan Parham to guard. Well, Tom Telesco comes in and he wants to sign James and play him at center. That means Parham's playing guard. And as Hill said yesterday, he hasn't looked very good. He's not a guard. And then Johnson Powers, he's not a guard either. He played center, and he barely played at Oregon. He barely played at Oregon. So now you got Parham, James, and Whitehair protecting the interior of your pocket with a quarterback who can't see. And you don't have Josh Jacobs making runs behind you. Zamir White's a good player. And Alexander Mattison struggled last year when he had to become the guy. He was a better change of pace runner than he was a runner.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly what you're saying there, like we talked about yesterday, you can have all the talent in the world, no matter how good Zamir White is. It doesn't matter if the offensive line can't hold up for him. It doesn't matter if your quarterback doesn't have enough protection to have time to get the ball out. So these are important elements. The Raiders win total again set at 6.5. The Broncos at 5.5, and you are still getting even money right now at some spots on that over. And for Bo Nix, while the Broncos win total hasn't adjusted, Michael, his offensive rookie of the year odds certainly have. They were at 30-1 plus at one point, steadily bet down from even as recent as last Friday when we were on the air, you could get 18-19-1. Today, that's 11-1 for Bo Nix, the way he's performed here in the preseason.
And he's only going to get better, Stormy, because here's the reality. This is not Michael Lombardi hyping him. This is about an extension of Sean Payton on the field, right? And that's what all quarterback coaches want. They want somebody who can do what they want them to do, who's no longer going to just do what they want to do. That's where it drove Russell Wilson crazy. He couldn't get Wilson to call the play. Wilson wanted to look at a sheet. He wanted him to call the play. There's a problem right there to start off with. And so those things kind of manifest. And Wilson was used to kind of being, for lack of a better term, a little bit creative or painting outside the box when the play calls, as opposed to Sean wants, look, three steps, turn your right foot here, throw the ball here. He's spending all his week preparing the quarterback to make the game easy.
As far as this week 3 preseason game goes, the Broncos are laying 3.5 against the Cardinals, total 35. Their week 1 matchup at Seattle, Broncos getting 5 in that game, total 42.5. Bo Nix has yet to officially be named the starter, but based on everything we've seen and everything we've heard out of Sean Payton's mouth about his young quarterback and the way he went up and did what he could to make sure other people weren't trying to get Bo Nix in the draft, I feel like that is the expectation there. This preseason, on his 7 drives, he scored on 6 of them, led the Broncos to 30 team points, 77% completions, going 23 of 30, second best among the 49 quarterbacks with 20-plus pass attempts, 116 passer rating. And this is a guy, again, who had more college starts than anybody else. He's very experienced. He does get the ball out quickly. He has athleticism. He looks like a grown-up. And I think that this is a reason for Broncos fans finally to be a little bit excited about something. And after having a guy like Russell Wilson, who does hold on to the ball a little bit too long, takes a ton of sacks, I think that'll be a very welcome feeling to have somebody who can get the ball out quick.
Yeah, no question. And that saves the line. The other thing we didn't hit on this in this analysis between the two teams is Denver's offensive line is better than the Broncos, better than the Raiders. There's no question. They'll run the football, and you hit the nail on the head, but you said Williams will be a better runner this year than he was last year. So they're going to run the football. They're going to manage the game. They're going to go into the game saying to themselves, how do we have to play to win? Because that's what Sean does.
Yeah. And we will, when we come back after this quick timeout, we will talk a little bit more about the Raiders, just diving into the quarterback selection in general of Gardner Minshew. We do have another quarterback competition ongoing with Russell Wilson, who you just mentioned, formerly of Denver Broncos, now the Pittsburgh Steelers. Who's going to win that job between he and Justin Fields, and who should it be? We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.